Welcome to PostStatus Draft, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Joe and I discuss all things HTTPS and HTTP2, and a little bit about how they affect WordPress. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the PostStatus Club multiple times per week. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining around 600 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, WooThemes. If you're looking for the ultimate WordPress toolkit, their premium themes and extensions, including WooCommerce, get you set up fast for web greatness. They're hosting a conference all about WooCommerce in Austin, where I'll be speaking on April 6th through 8th. Go to wooconf.com for information about the conference and woothemes.com for more about everything Woo-related. Thank you to the team at WooThemes for being a PostStatus partner. Now here's our show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian Krogsgaard, and I'm the editor of PostStatus.
And I'm Joe, a co-founder and the CTO of HumanMade, and welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast. And this week, we're going to talk about HTTP2 and HTTPS.
And really, we decided moments ago that we're actually going to talk about HTTPS and HTTP2.
In a respective order.
In that order. So why have we chosen to have this topic today?
Oh, you know, ran out of other topics.
We gotta talk about something.
It's been on my mind this week because of some auth stuff that we've been talking about for the REST API, and not having HTTPS everywhere is a bit of a pain, turns out. So that's one area.
And it's also safe to say that both of these things have been in the news a little bit. HTTPS getting a lot broader support, HTTP2 getting some pretty broad support. So this is going to be a podcast where I guess we define what these are, and we also talk about why they're important and maybe how they change some of what we do from a web development perspective.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll probably get into that on HTTP2 more, but I guess we should start with HTTPS.
Sounds good. So, HTTPS... from a layman's point of view, is going to be that it turns your browser bar green, and it's usually on e-commerce sites. But now it's on a lot more websites now. But technically, what changes when you go from HTTP to HTTPS?
So I guess you're fundamentally all traffic sent over HTTPS is encrypted. So though everything looks the same in your browser or when you're using command line or when you're using PHP curl or anything, underneath the hood, unbeknownst to you, everything is packaged up, encrypted, sent to the receiving person, and then decrypted there. So I guess at the lowest level, that's kind of what's changing.
And that's why it protects things like your credit card details being secured so that someone can't hijack that type of information.
Right, because generally speaking, it's not difficult for somebody to listen into the traffic going between your computer and somebody else's or a server or something. So making it encrypted is kind of the easiest way, because now you can just send your traffic out in the open. It doesn't matter who looks at it, because they can't decipher any useful information out of it. Whereas the typical HTTP way is, somebody's sitting in the same cafe as you or something like that, or they're, you know, outside your house tapping into your Wi-Fi, then they can, in plain text, just see exactly what you're doing on the internet, and that would include any passwords you enter or any credit card details or any email messages you may be receiving or anything. So it's really important to have, just from a privacy point of view as well as security, that, you know, you might as well, all else being equal, have everything that you do only be viewable by you because that's the only person that it's intended for.
And to enable HTTPS in the browser, you have to have a protocol of some sort. And the two that people hear are SSL and TLS. But TLS is much more broadly used, right?
Yeah, so the
even though we all call it SSL.
Right. So the first implementation or the first spec was SSL. And as, you know, new ones came out, then that kind of name stuck. So though the later standards are TLS, I think, is it TLS 1.3? I think that's the latest now. People still call it SSL. Just, for, you know, it's just one of those things.
So it's secure sockets layer and transport layer security, which I had to look up.
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, those namings don't really make any difference, you know, in terms of the actual words in them.
They're just words that mean something secure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The actual underlying cryptography is based off of private public key communication. And if that kind of stuff interests you, then you can find out more about that. But basically, the principle is both of parties have their own secret keys, and they both give each other public keys, and then they can talk to each other securely because there is some clever I'm gonna get this explanation so wrong. There's some I guess you would call it, I don't know, fundamentals in the mathematics behind primes that allows you to do that, where you can give somebody else a key that can only read what you encrypt with your secret key, but they can never determine what your secret key is. It's somewhat counterintuitive to, like, me and you couldn't come up with that system just like me deciding to write something and give you a public key, like without the unique properties of the mathematics behind it, then you can't really do this. So it's somewhat, I'd say, of a discovery in that case.
And there are degrees of strength to those keys, right? So, like, you can...
Yeah, so basically the...
128 or 256 or something.
Right, and that... You can really just think of that as the size, I guess, of the encryption key, and the bigger it is, the more difficult it is to break. Typically, what seems to happen is, as you know, as processing power of computers increases, then we get closer and closer to being able to brute force, you know, a 128-bit key or something like that. Coupled with that, quite often what will happen is very small weaknesses are found in the algorithms to, you know, encrypt the data. So maybe some algorithm has a certain weakness that allows it to be 50, right? And maybe that makes it 50% easier or something. So now 128-bit key, you know, you can brute force in half the time that you were imagining you could. Plus, computers are kind of improving at a at a very quick rate. So there's a general trend of just, you know, every couple of years we're increasing the size of our keys, and currently kind of 4,000, whatever it is, something bit key is kind of the maximum that you'll go to.
You know what always cracks me up about when people talk about the time it would take to brute force something is they'd never take into account, like, what if it gets lucky?
You know? It's true. Yeah.
It's always, I mean, like, worst case scenario, this will take a million years. But it could take 1 year.
if it's between, like, you know, we say, oh, it's going to take 30 years to crack this, which is usually, usually is considering worst case scenario that you try every other key. But yeah, it's not that unlikely that you get it in 1 year. You know, it's only one in 30. Yeah, like, if somebody is super, you know, really wants to crack something, then maybe, I don't know, maybe there's even situations where it is worth going 30 years to break something.
But where the smaller keys come into play is where, say, you have a dedicated company that hacks stuff for a living, and it used to require a multi-million-dollar supercomputer to do this type of brute forcing, And this company now, because of technology, can maybe spend a couple $100,000 on a similar powered computer, or maybe a computer with 10 times that power. You know, Moore's law is kind of taking into effect.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, that definitely does happen. There is, if it's going to take 5 months and cost you a couple $100,000 again, there are situations when that's going to be worth it. And the thing is, like, if that's a 128-bit key, it would have been really quite trivial to do a 256-bit key or something for the implementers originally. And that would have made it, you know, magnitudes of times more difficult to crack, but they just presumed that 128 was going to be enough. So we never really know, I guess, how difficult it is going to be in the future, like maybe, you know, 4K keys, which is kind of the max that we're on right now. In a couple of years, then maybe that would be quite easy. And
so standards are trying to be conservative to future-proof themselves against technology. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. This totally isn't really my area, but my understanding is based off of, you know, Moore's law or whatever, we can extrapolate. If something really crazy happens, like quantum computers can actually compute orders of magnitude more than what we ever thought that we'd be able to, then we'd definitely be in trouble. Mm-hmm. But I think that's more of a theoretical thing. In practice, what happens is there's insecurities in implementations, and those are kind of the things that get exploited and things like that, which is kind of like the Heartbleed issue that was around last year was exactly that.
My internet just decided it didn't like all this encryption talk. So
that's, you know what that is. It's like the taps on the wire. It's causing it to disconnect.
Probably. So government, the U.S. government doesn't like encryption very much right now. So they have this active preventative measure where they just crash people's computers that are podcasting about encryption.
Exactly.
So you were saying about the encryption strength. I guess we just need to skip right past that now because, you know.
If we're out of flow, I don't even remember.
Yeah. Point is, SSL is meant to be a little future-proof, and it's got these encryption keys on both sides that help that communication happen. From a web development perspective, though, it has a lot of impact. We already obviously talked about, you know, when you're transferring secure information over the web, but there's also stuff that it has to do with regards to like web speed and security and or other types of security, I guess.
In terms of general web development, when you're developing on your own machine, obviously it's typically not coming into it there, but when it comes to deploying your code and you want HTTPS on your website, if you're the person that's responsible for that, then there's a lot to learn around deploying it as well. And I think that is probably the biggest or one of the biggest reasons why HTTPS hasn't kind of caught on 100% yet. There was the price thing of obviously having to purchase SSL certificates. But even just running it isn't the simplest thing.
Yeah, you can get mixed content warnings and stuff like that. So if you, say, embed a audio file that's not HTTPS, then the browser trying to deliver the page over HTTPS will block the audio file because it can't guarantee the security of that file. Same thing for images and any other type of external data, really.
Yeah, though I think the browsers are definitely kind of shifting a little in their implementations here. And Chrome is the one that I know best. But for example, Chrome now will, if you go to a site which is served over HTTPS, but there is an image which is HTTP, it will, instead of like showing you a big red bar or whatever, or a yellow bar, then it will instead just show it as if it was HTTP, so it's just like whited out. Because I think the browser manufacturers have kind of wanted to use that as a, you know, it's better off having some stuff HTTPS than nothing at all.
So the warning bar could have scared people. So
right, because the warning bar isn't. It's no more insecure to have the main page HTTPS and then the rest of the things on it HTTP. That's no more insecure than having the whole site HTTP. And we don't show a red warning for somebody who's just on a HTTP site. So I think that was kind of the idea there. But Chrome is kind of a little weird in that some things that it will still block, like scripts and things, won't still be able to access. But there are some asset types that it will still load on an HTTPS page. I mean, the answer is really, you know, you should just have everything HTTPS, and that's the easiest way to go. But there are, you know, in terms of trying to just get wide adoption generally, then I guess that's what they're trying to do there.
And if you start from HTTPS with a new website, it's also easier than if you have a website that's, say, 5 years old with thousands of pages of content. There's more to deal with. And WordPress has a lot of stuff built in that makes dealing with HTTPS relatively simple. If you're doing your development properly, then there's methods to like enqueue scripts and styles with the right protocol. But if you hard code the HTTP, then that type of stuff would have to get fixed from a code perspective.
It's one of the nice things about having your whole website be dynamic with something like WordPress is when it comes to doing things like that, mm-hmm. it's quite easy. Whereas if you have, 10 years archives worth of HTML files or something, and then you've got to go and try and update everything, it's a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. So like a static site, if someone was using a static site generator without HTTPS, then it would probably be pretty annoying.
Hmm.
Or not a generator would be even worse. It's just
right, exactly. Search and replace. Those were back in the days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the price, and that's been a big to-do of late. Historically, the way SSL really operated was your average price might be like $12 or $15 a year or something for kind of a baseline simple SSL certificate. And they all have these upsells that do various things, that none of which are often compelling. It's just random bracketing, I think, that they do.
Okay. Well, there's two classes, really, of SSL certificate. Well, one is...
I hadn't gotten to EV yet. I was...
Okay.
I
thought that was your bracketing for EV. I thought that you're including EV in that.
No, there's bracketing arbitrary, even within right. simple SSL.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't really know what those give you.
Right. But they're there. Like, it'll be like $13 or $29 or $32. Right. And it's like,
I'm
interested. I don't know.
I'm going to check out, let's say, like Thought. Let's see. I'm wondering what you get from a...
So Namecheap has them starting at $9 a year.
Okay. So what is the one up from that give you there?
Domain validation. So simple, regular old SSL. Oh, I see. $9 a year is just regular, whatever. You can get multi-domain for $29.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Wildcard SSL for $94. So if you have subdomains, stuff like that. So that's actually.
So I feel like they're being quite good about it.
Yeah, that's nice. But then they have different brands. So like Komodo versus Rapid SSL, and Rapid SSL is $2 more. Rapid SSL wildcard is $50.
Why? I don't know why you would really care about that.
That's what I'm saying. I have no idea what the different brands mean.
Well, it's the different authority that is signing it. But again, I just don't really know why you would care that much. But
I say that, but I bought one off of. I can't even remember the name of the company. Significantly more expensive.
Some sketch outfit, was it?
No, it was more expensive because it was recommended to me by Ryan Sullivan from WP Sitecare to use this company. And so that's the one I went with. And I think it's mostly because their service is just really good. Anyway, my choice doesn't matter. But basically you have a couple of options within regular old SSL, and that requires some level of verification where you say, hey, this is my domain, but it's not really any more significant than like what you would have to do to install Google Analytics on your website. Like, it's kind of a just do something on your website to ensure that like you have access to it, and then we can apply an SSL certificate, and you do that dance of going back and forth, and we'll talk about what makes that easier in a second. Extended validation SSL takes a little longer. Do you have extended EV SSL anywhere?
No, we don't have that on anything that we've purchased. I think we host a couple for clients, but that's all.
Yeah. So in that scenario,
I've never gone through the process.
I haven't either, because it looks like a pain in the butt.
You know what? I seem to remember back in the day when I didn't really know what I was doing. I think I accidentally applied for one, and it just took weeks and weeks. And I ended up just canceling the order because they weren't always documents. And I was like, I just want a SSL certificate. So I guess thinking back, I probably just chose to get an EV one because it wasn't that cheap either.
And what happens on extended validation, that's when you see the name of the entire company in the address bar. And there's a couple of things about this that make it a little better. One, for serious e-commerce sites, it might be good because you don't just see that it's HTTPS, but you literally see the name of the organization. And I think that gives it a little more oomph. But also, they have to go through a process that takes several days to where there's a legitimate like check to make sure that, hey, this is this business, this is their website, this is what they do, and we're validating that this is what they do. That said, Amazon.com doesn't have extended validation.
It's too cheap. Jeff Bezos or whatever he's called.
Yeah. So, I mean,
in fact, well, they don't even have HTTPS by default. So
I was actually just looking at this. It doesn't go. Poor. They don't even go HTTPS until you go to your cart.
I see.
Or maybe it's mixed content.
It might be. The way that I look at it is, so domain validation is the reason why that exists for a user, is so they know that the Amazon.com that they're looking at is actually Amazon.com, and it's not some man in the middle pretending to be Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. The reason you would want extended validation is so you know actually who owns that website. So it's just a kind of user trust kind of thing.
Yeah. So a classic way to get screwed over would be someone emails you a link that they says is Amazon, and then you go to it and it looks like it's Amazon, but it's not Amazon.
Right. And they could still have an HTTPS a certificate for that domain if it's amazon-uk.com or something.
Right.
So you don't necessarily know that that's still by the organization Amazon.
Yeah. So you can still get in trouble if you do dumb things like click links in emails from people that you don't know.
Right. The problem is I don't think users mainly understand this stuff anyway, right. So I'm not sure how much it does help.
But if you're a buyer, that's what you would get. You would get that your whole name in the SSL in the browser, which I don't know. My name would probably confuse people because my business name is not the same as my website name. So
yeah, because I guess you kind of have to have your actual company. Mm-hmm. Name it
would, mine would say like Under Vulcan LLC, which would make no sense on PostStatus.
Sketchy holding company in the Cayman Islands.
In the Alabamians. Anyway. So, I mean, EV SSL is super the minority in terms of what you see, but it is pretty common. For simple SSL, there are some new tools out there that are working really hard to make encrypting the entire web a new standard, and the browsers are cooperating quite well with this. Let's Encrypt is the most recognizable, biggest effort on this front, and it's a tool that allows you to get SSL certificates for free, which is all by itself a huge way to get this benefit. But also Let's Encrypt has an API that makes it automated and open so that you can do it easily. So that's a big deal, right?
Yeah, it is. I think before Let's Encrypt, Cloudflare were doing free SSL. And
that's true.
And then just after Let's Encrypt, AWS have just launched a free certificate thing too. Let's Encrypt definitely had the most interest because that one is you can just generate certificates and use them anywhere, which really, you know, AWS, you need to be using AWS, and same with Cloudflare. But the let's encrypt basically. I think they're now a certificate authority, right? That sign their own certificates, from what I understand. I think
they are now.
So yeah, that is, they've just, oh, is that, that's a collaboration with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, right? Is that right?
That sounds right. The EFF is one of their, they have a list of major sponsors.
Right.
The EFF is one, Mozilla and Chrome, two pretty decent sponsors to have on your side when you have a browser-based product. But also, I mean, from the WordPress world alone, Automattic, SiteGround, Sucuri are all also major sponsors. So
nice, yeah. So they, I mean, basically Let's Encrypt just decided to blow the market open and say we're just going to give everybody free SSL certificates, because there's no reason really, apart from a kind of old school, kind of, I don't even know how exactly the you know, list of authorities was established, but it was a bit seen a little bit kind of just unnecessarily money grabbing. Didn't really cost anything to issue domain validated certificates.
Once you have a process and an infrastructure to do this, then it doesn't really cost money. So it was it's the perfect form of revenue generation for a long time.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the carrier, like cell phone carriers charging for text messages back in the day.
Yeah, it's not exactly a big information. It's not a big information transfer. It's not like you're downloading video.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, I guess recently, I don't know if it's still in beta or not, but you can actually kind of use it properly now, and that will also do things like automatically install your SSL certificate on your web server, which, you know, a lot of the configuration people find quite difficult to do with Nginx and Apache, I think that works with. So it can help a lot of that stuff for you. I think it can automatically roll your certificates when they need renewing. For anybody who didn't know, then a certificate only is valid for any amount of time. So
I think they're recommending 90 days or less, right?
Yeah, I think either that's due to the fact that they want to, they're still beginning, so they weren't signing long-term certificates, or they just think that that is a best practice, and that's why it's at 90 days. But the idea there is, if somebody accidentally gets your, your keys are compromised or something like that, then you can re-roll your certificates, and when that period is extended, is up, then, you know, whoever stole your certificates will no longer be able to use them.
And your website service, unless they have a scripted programmatic way of interfacing with Let's Encrypt's API, then you're going to have to do this yourself. But some services, some hosts, and some like automatic WordPress.com, for instance, but also like SiteGround and DreamHost, I know have implemented Let's Encrypt to where they'll handle the recycling of the certificate for you. But if you just go do this on your DigitalOcean droplet or something, then you're going to have to figure out a way to make sure you're recycling your certificates on your own.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there is a user downside, because it's not
right.
When you pay someone, they're going to basically manage the hard stuff for you once you initially get it installed.
Yeah. Hopefully it kind of does go in the direction of just being automatic. So it's just kind of, maybe longer term solution is your web server automatically talks to Let's Encrypt, for example, and just automatically always rolls its own certificates, and it's never something you have to worry about. That's the kind of point I think it needs to get to, to be so easy that people don't have to worry about it. We still have plenty of situations where I get it one day and some website is down because I forgot to renew the SSL certificate.
And the adoption's going quick. I don't have a graph in front of me, and I'm a little afraid to try to use the internet right now. I might get booted again. Adoption of HTTPS on websites has gone up significantly, which has been really cool.
I just did a quick check in my browser. So currently I have 8 tabs open, and 7 of those are HTTPS.
Yeah. Mine's similar.
So based off of that solid data point.
Yeah. Yep. Mine's actually extremely similar. And then based on the number of browsers I have, only one or two of 20 or so are EV.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of HTTPS in a nutshell. HTTPS and WordPress.
Is post status on HTTPS? So it's about to.
Yeah, it's full HTTPS. But I also do e-commerce. But so I still haven't moved my personal blog, for instance, but I'm probably going to do it with Let's Encrypt because it's free. And I think that'll be more and more common. It does do a number of things, though, like since that information's encrypted, that's one of the big reasons why a while back Google refers basically went away, like search referrals, because Google itself went all HTTPS and encrypted search data. So that's why you now don't really get any information about who was searching for your website.
Interesting. So they didn't kind of purposefully create some other way around that to find out.
There are ways to do it, but it's less specific, I think.
Okay.
Like if you have an AdWords account, there's some sort of reason why you can still see stuff. But at a base level, it's encryption based, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. They just don't transfer it to any old website. And I guess maybe that's because it's an HTTPS to HTTPS communication. I don't know. Point being, I know it had something to do with HTTPS a while back. And that's the type of thing that happens with HTTPS. It's encrypted, and you don't learn the same type of information necessarily. But also, from a WordPress perspective, what you've been working on with the REST API, if you have a remote communication layer going on, you have to authenticate. And one of the common authentication methods for the REST API is OAuth. And OAuth 1 versus OAuth 2, OAuth 2 requires HTTPS, right?
Yes.
So right now, OAuth 1 is supported in the WordPress REST API, and OAuth 2 doesn't exist yet. Is that right?
Doesn't exist. It could exist, but not everyone will be able to use it. That's why we haven't focused on it. The reason for this is not just arbitrary, because everybody wants to use OAuth 2 because it's much easier to use. And the reason it's easy to use is because you hand off the encryption layer to HTTPS. Mm. Whereas on HTTP, where only you'll be able to use OAuth 1, then you have to do that encryption yourself. So even if you were to use, like using HTTP, OAuth 2 over HTTP would be a really bad idea, because there's no encryption or anything, because you're not leveraging that. So you're just sending secrets over or whatever in the open. So that's kind of, it is annoying that you can't use OAuth 2, but that's not because the spec just decided to make it so you're going to have to use HTTPS. It's actually a fundamental thing about they've shifted all of the encryption to be handled by HTTPS, and then you just add on your own things in that in the quest, and that's why it's much easier.
So does that mean who all has to have HTTPS enabled for OAuth 2 to be able to be used? Anyone connecting to the client?
So anybody, in a world where you have an app and you want to connect to anybody's site to publish content to it, every site that you would want to connect to would need HTTPS. The client itself is relatively standard. The client just needs to be able to speak SSL, basically. So it doesn't need to have a certificate itself or anything. But it will need some OpenSSL library probably running on it, which is pretty standard across the board.
So if NomadBase was a client and PostStatus decided to connect to NomadBase, both would have to have HTTPS?
If we were using OAuth 2, yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. If in your scenario, is NomadBase the server or the client, though?
You choose.
Okay, so let's say that NoahBase wants to push a location to Brian Krogsgaard. So Brian Krogsgaard is going to need to allow NoahBase to do that. Now, for that scenario, Brian Krogsgaard is going to need SSL to be able to do that. If it were the other way around, then you wouldn't necessarily need it. If Brian Krogsgaard wanted to push something to NoahBase, NoahBase is on SSL, so that's okay. You can push that way. But realistically, you're really going to need on every website that is going to have the API on it having SSL if you want to use OAuth 2, which is, unless the API takes even longer than what we think to get into core, probably not going to happen.
Right.
OAuth 1 is actually not as bad as people think, and I've been chatting to Ryan about this, and we kind of feel like there is maybe a way forward on how to fix all of this OAuth stuff. OAuth 1 will probably still be part of it, but there is things that we can do, hopefully, like making it part of client libraries and things to make it a lot easier.
That's cool. What am I missing on HTTPS so far? Talking points.
I did think of something, but now I've forgotten. So,
so therefore, it doesn't exist. We've told people everything.
Right, exactly. So
if people are, right now, they don't have HTTPS, and they're saying, okay, y'all have convinced me this is a good idea, what would you say they should do for implementing it? What would be your advice?
I'd be surprised if anybody would be convinced by this, because there are many more people better than us at doing this. So if you haven't already got on board with HTTPS, this probably isn't the conversation to convince.
If you've gotten this far into the conversation, if this is let it be known.
The straw that broke the camel's back.
These last 30 minutes were pointless to you.
So I would, I'd say if you're on any of the hosts that does support SSL, like which, WP Engine, I know do, SiteGround, like you were saying, do, if you're on AWS, it's very easy to do. Just do it for everything. I think we need to get to the point where even when you chuck up a simple personal web page for yourself, there's no private information, just go with HTTPS every time. There's no downside to doing that. And I think it needs to become a habit of everything just to be on HTTPS. So you can get free certificates now from several places. If you're not really comfortable doing it, then you should do it on some small site that you put out there. You wouldn't usually put HTTPS. The problem is, I think people have waited until they've needed HTTPS for PCI compliance or something like that. So they only do it at those necessary points. Instead, I think we should change it to be expect to do HTTPS everywhere by default. So, for example, any of our clients, they would never usually request HTTPS or might not necessarily, but we just do it by default anyway.
Let it be known that Krogsgaard.com and joehoyle.co.uk, which is, by the way, the simplest website I've ever seen.
Yeah, the problem with joehoyle.co.uk is I don't actually know where it's hosted, so I can't change it. Otherwise, obviously, would say co-host of the Draft Post Status podcast.
That's right, it's not even on there. I thought Post Status was going to be on your resume now.
If I had a resume, it would be.
I think this is your resume. So neither of us have HTTPS on our personal sites, but I do agree with you. And if nothing else that we've said doesn't convince you, then what should convince you is HTTP 2 and other technologies that are leaning towards HTTPS, but even more so, they're really more than leaning towards, they're kind of forcing it in a way. So you already mentioned OAuth 2 requiring HTTPS. Same thing with supporting HTTP 2.
The other thing that we didn't mention is there's a good amount of browser APIs that are choosing to be HTTPS only. And that is, I think, for a couple of reasons. For example, I don't think it is because I think it's a bit late, but for example, getting access to the webcam data on the web, that could quite easily be a HTTPS only feature, so it will only work if you're on HTTPS. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is around privacy, and they don't want access to APIs on the system that are broadcast over HTTP. But also, it's a nice kind of stick to push people to adopt HTTPS as much as they can. But as well as that, like you mentioned, there's the HTTP 2 thing, which is, I don't know how you want to start that that conversation. What is HTTP 2?
HTTP 2 is what comes after HTTP 1.
Dot 1.
Dot 1. So, I mean, HTTP is how we've used the internet for ages. And HTTP 2 is how we will use it going forward. it's literally a version of the entire HTTP network, which is like the web. It's kind of the follow-up to Speedy. That's how you pronounce it, right? I like to pronounce it Spidey.
S-P-D-Y.
Because it sounds like Spider-Man. I feel like they should have a spider logo for Speedy. Former. Speedy got waxed by HTTP 2, which...
Yeah, that's true, but HTTP 2 was only really possible because of the design of Speedy, probably. So I'd say it's a precursor that
never literally
quite made
based
it out of
it.
The gate.
So it doesn't change how the web works, but it enables a lot of new stuff, and the syntax is the same. So, like, broadly, HTTP 2 is going to be like HTTP 1.1, but there are a number of things that it affects. The biggest stuff that comes to me is performance-based.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from a personal type of things that are interesting to me kind of standpoint. So, like, for instance, one of the things people used to do all the time was, like, concatenate all their styles and scripts into like just one style sheet and one JavaScript file. Now, with HTTP 2, it kind of flips that on its head because it can process all that stuff at the same time. And actually, you're better off having just nicely minified files, but only kind of modularizing them as you need them, because it processes mm-hmm. them all at the same time, but it would still have to get through each file.
Right. So, yeah, the main thing is when you request a website now, it can return you multiple resources at once. So it can return you the page content, the CSS, the images, all in one go, rather than the traditional HTTP 1.1 way, or, you know, HTTP 1, is to request the HTML, and then you look at the HTML and say, oh, look, there's a style sheet here, I should go fetch that. Oh, look, there's a JavaScript file, I should go fetch that. Instead, it flips that so the server can basically push you as much stuff as it thinks you're going to need. Therefore, there's no reason to not have lots of little files, because the server pushing you 10 little files is no different to pushing you one bigger file.
And that's a good thing from a speed perspective, although it does flip some best practices of web development on its head.
Right.
It actually makes WordPress's enqueuing pipeline methodology suddenly better. Like, it always kind of stunk because it was...
Right. All of these dependencies.
All the plugins that would load a style or a script and then require another one, and like none of them would be combined or anything. So it was super pain. You ended up loading 20 JavaScript files. Now that just doesn't matter anymore.
Though on the flip side of that, the admin, which does do that with its load stars and load scripts.php, which does concatenate everything to one, is probably now going to be more harmful than before. So, I mean, they're gaining some, losing some there.
At least that one can be reversed a little bit.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other things about HTTP 2 that make it special?
So I think one thing we didn't mention is it has a reliance on, or maybe we did mention that, on HTTPS. So for anybody excited about this, you're going to need to get on the HTTPS bandwagon. Maybe it's not very exciting, but it is probably worth mentioning that HTTP 2 is a binary protocol, so it doesn't send all of the data in plain text that HTTP 1 does. So you can look at the data being streamed for over HTTP and just see it, you know, in, as it were, plain text when you, I don't know, inspect packets or something like that. HTTP 2 isn't like that. It's all muxed up into a single binary stream, which probably isn't going to have much effect apart from maybe some types of sniffing that you could do before to see the traffic. Probably won't be as easy or possible. But it's not a big kind of user feature, I guess.
And it's binary instead of textual.
Yes.
According to the FAQ. I have a hard time really understanding that.
I don't know what to say to that.
So let's see here. Server push is another. I'm literally looking at the HTTP 2
right, so
FAQ.
The server push really is the ability that allows the server to push extra resources your way that it thinks you're going to need. One thing probably worth mentioning about HTTP 2 as well is for this to work the best that it could, because I've wanted to put it in, you know, test it on some websites. So to give you an idea of how complicated that can be, we have, you know, our web server with Nginx, that is going to have to be speak HTTP 2. Luckily, it does by now. We have that sitting behind, in our case, Amazon load balancer. That'll need to speak HTTP 2. Unfortunately, that does not. So we're cut off at that point, cannot do HTTP any further. Then we have CloudFront sitting in front of that. That will also have to speak HTTP 2, which it does not. So we've got several levels to go through. And again, people using things like Akamai, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I don't think they have HTTP 2 yet. So you've kind of got to have it almost the whole way up the stack, really, to take full advantage of it. You could still have it on your CDN, but not on your web server behind that. But as far as I understand it, you won't be able to then use the server push features and things like that because you're not able to get, you know, the HTTP 2 isn't running all the way back to your PHP code or whatever.
As far as adoption of HTTP 2, this kind of blew my mind. I linked up the other day that HTTP 2 has hit 25% adoption on Chrome. And
wow.
Yeah.
That is, I did not know that.
Yeah, you don't read my
newsletter. Now I feel like, wow. You know what? I read that and I saw it as, for some reason, I thought it was saying 25% of browsers support HTTP 2. Obviously,
no,
I skimmed it.
25% of resources in Chrome are served over HTTP 2.
Wow. So who's serving the HTTP 2? Must be like Facebook or something.
Yeah, somebody big. Yeah. It's just Netflix.
Yeah. It's not bandwidth alone. No.
And Speedy is at 5%. So Chrome... Right. Is going to no longer support Speedy as of May 15th. So Speedy is deprecated by Chrome, therefore it's dead because it was reduced so much. But websites that are using Speedy but not HTTP 2 need to start using HTTP 2. So I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, 5% is a good amount for them to stop supporting, though I guess it falls back to HTTP 1, so it's not like it's going to break anything.
Yeah. You just don't get the new good stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so that's HTTP 2. What else is there about it? Let's look at the Wikipedia page.
I'm not really sure. The big thing is the kind of... sending multiple stuff at once, I think that's going to have the biggest impact.
So there are a few things in terms, I'm glad I looked at this because it was about services that support HTTP 2. And one that came to mind was Nginx, because Nginx didn't, not that long ago, got support for Speedy, right? Like it was a little bit of a workaround.
Because I think Automatic sponsored some of that.
Yeah, and now since version, I don't even know what version Nginx is on right now, but they've supported HTTP 2 since 1.9.5. So that's something to consider if you're saying to yourself, hey, I want to use HTTP 2 in my system. Both Apache and Nginx do support it, but neither have been around super long. Apache since 2.4.12. I have no idea what version it's on.
No, me neither.
And Nginx since 1.9.5. And that's definitely recent for Nginx.
Yeah, that's very recent. That is more recent than what you're going to get on any of the old PPAs or older kind of distros of Linux or something. So if you've got a bit of an older server and you just try and update it, that's probably not going to work, yeah. Unfortunately.
And then if you also have like a web application firewall or something, like if you use Security, that kind of thing, you need to make sure that uses supports HTTP2. My dog's barking like crazy. This is a Friday afternoon podcast. That's what happens.
Blame it on me.
Yeah, it's Joe's fault.
So I'm looking at Facebook response headers, as you do, you know, whenever you visit Facebook. And they do appear to be indeed serving HTTP2, so.
So that's probably 15 of that 25%.
Exactly, yeah.
From a WordPress perspective, I think it's worth talking a little bit about both HTTPS and HTTP2. Zach Tolman's been doing a lot of work with this, and I think some other folks like Eric Lewis and maybe Scott Taylor were also looking into it. And a lot of stuff got done in WordPress 4.4 to make HTTP2 better with WordPress. So if you're interested in HTTP2, it's also good to know that there is work going on in WordPress core that also helps with that.
Yeah, I think,
and I don't know that it's specific. Like, it's probably more like how the admin runs, more so than like how does your website run.
Yeah, I think it's been more the HTTPS stuff, which is how does your website run, like making sure you're not getting mixed content and stuff like that. I know that there's been a lot of really good effort there, and I think I'm pretty pretty proud of the WordPress or the contributors in WordPress that are focused on that. I think it's a really valuable thing. It's really good to see.
Oh, it seems like maybe there might be like an add theme support for HTTP2 type of thing, which is
odd. Oh, interesting.
And that way,
that seems like a funny.
Well, that way your theme could provide both concatenated and non-concatenated.
Oh, I see.
Scripts, for instance.
Interesting.
So those types of conversations are happening.
Mm-hmm.
There are also some tickets that have been closed, and I think there is still more there to do about making SSL easier, about fixing mixed content. And that's a discussion going on in core about helping identify and fix mixed content warnings. So that switching can do that easier.
I think Zach and John Blackburn were working on a pretty cool plugin for detecting that.
Yep. I think I've driven this one into the ground. I don't know if you know anymore.
Yeah. The main kind of thing that, it's kind of nice technology and everything, but it's kind of interesting to see how the whole web moves forward when we've got two technologies, HTTPS and HTTP2, that's like two of the underpinnings really of the web as we know it. And it's in one case, like, it's taken a very long time for HTTPS to get where it is now, but it does seem to be hopefully kind of at the start of the hockey stick. And HTTP2, like, it's interesting to see how quickly that can move and if it will move. For example, I think, compare it to IPv6 or something that still hasn't really
still
caught
lagging.
On.
It yeah, seems like exactly. This one's going really quick to me.
Yeah, but maybe that's because we're closer to it. I don't know. But there does seem to be more user features, as it were, or user advantages, like a faster website. Whereas maybe, some other big shifts have struggled because there's actually no user benefit to them generally.
yeah, user benefits are always nice.
Exciting.
I know that's, I mean, that's usually what inspires me to do something, unless it's just an egregious security flaw or something.
Yeah, that's more the guilt of exposing your users to
security. Yeah. Now, if it's a minor security flaw, eh.
Yeah. No one's going to want to go up to post status that hard, surely.
Yeah. Exactly. Ooh, I found a nice visual on Cloudflare's blog of the multiplexing concept.
It's could you explain it audibly?
The best talk I saw on this, I'm going to just have to link everything Zach Tolman does. WordCamp Chicago, Zach Tolman did a talk about these dependencies that you have on the web with like JavaScript and CSS all kind of relying on each other, and one thing has to happen before the next thing can happen, and that's based on the TCP connections. So JavaScript, mm-hmm. CSS, yeah. and like image assets would each have a TCP connection, meaning each has a journey back and forth between the browser and the server, and they can block each other. And that's what creates those big horizontal waterfalls where it looks like a set of stairs, because your website's not really doing a good job in managing those conversations between the server mm-hmm. and the browser. With HTTP2, it's all one connection. So it's not a different connection for each type of asset. And therefore, because it's one connection, that's why you can have more concurrency, and it's less waiting on this to happen before this can start type of stuff. Everything downloads at the same time, but it's literally because of the one TCP connection instead of three.
Right, right.
I don't know if I'd describe that any better.
I can understand what it would look like. I mean, I've purposefully not looked at it, so see if I can get a picture.
For example, cloudflare.com, average page load time, this is impressive. They actually, they measured their page load for 48 hours so that they could compare HTTP 1.x, Speedy 3.1, and HTTP 2. Their website's slow. Mm-hmm. So under HTTP 1, it was 9.07 seconds. Under Speedy, it was 7.06 seconds. And under HTTP2, it was 4.27 seconds.
Oh, wow. So that's a really big speed up over Speedy.
Yeah. Huh. So both a big speed up, both a nice increase over Speedy, but like more than twice as fast as HTTP.
Yeah.
So some pretty big wins there.
Yeah, no, it's it seems like we're on the precipice of, you know, PHP 7... HTTP2, a lot of performance increases, and I don't know whether we're just going to totally crap that away with, again, slowing everything down with more stuff on our pages, or whether the web is actually going to get quicker because of those things.
We'll just make bigger pages.
That's probably true. I think that's pretty much happened with bandwidth, from what I understand, of, you know, as people have had faster connections, now we've like 5 megabytes on a page.
Suddenly we need to watch 4K video instead of like 280p.
I need that 4K video on my 11-inch MacBook non-retina, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it's safe to say websites will continue to get bigger. That's just what they like to do. Unfortunately. But that is just the way things are. We can now keep websites being slow, but have more awesome stuff on them.
That's true, actually. I mean, you know.
Bigger gifts.
Either one's a win. Yeah.
The bigger gifts is really all I care about.
Have you been using the GIF Twitter feature?
No, I haven't, but I might, because, you know, making GIFs always kind of sucked. So, or at least it seemed like it sucked, so I didn't do it. But I found out, because Wes Boss, you know that guy?
He, not personally.
He made React for Beginners. he made a little video that was like, hey, this is how I make GIFs. And apparently there's like a little Ruby script or something that, maybe in Ruby, I don't know. Anyway, it's a little script on the command line that lets you take an MP4 and turn it into a GIF and
hold on, isn't that the wrong way really around? Small.
It is. But when you're, it lets you use something like ScreenFlow to record your screen, like a regular old movie, and then you export it as an MP4, but an MP4 is still big, and an MP4 doesn't loop.
Right.
So
you know what I use for that? I've got this app called LiceCap.
Well, I don't remember what this one's called, but it turns it into a GIF, so that then when you upload it to Twitter, it'll turn it back into an MP4, but it'll loop. I don't know, because MP4s are smaller.
Yeah, GIFs is an absolutely terrible format.
Yeah,
GIFs. GIFs. If you prefer.
HTTP2 NU is this. He's done it a couple times. It looks like the most recent one was WordCamp Boston. So I'm going to link this from Zach.
Maybe
Coleman.
We should call the episode that in homage.
That would kind of be.
Or ripping off.
Just ripping off their SEO. Their SEO. WordPress TVs is a lot better than mine anyway. So
yeah,
I think I'd lose that battle. Maybe I'll name it exactly the same thing. I'll even say Zach Tolman, HTTP2 and you. This podcast is hereby dedicated to Zach Tolman.
It's the new WordPress clickbait.
Yeah, this podcast is dedicated to Zach Tolman. He doesn't know it, but Zach, this one's for you. I'm the Delilah of podcasts. Or at least of WordPress podcasts.
Was that a plain white tease?
I don't know what a plain white tease is. You didn't grow up in the U.S., so...
Hold on. I don't know. I'm thinking of this song, but I think maybe that is also based off something else that maybe you're referencing.
You clearly need to understand who Delilah is. She's like the soft rock radio personality that... takes people's love calls and then dedicates songs to them and stuff.
Oh, that song makes so much more sense to me now. You've never heard of those song called Plain White Tees? I think it's called Delilah.
No, but now in our show notes, I'm going to link to this. It's very recent, but it's a BuzzFeed long read. It was posted on Valentine's Day. Duh. It's a BuzzFeed long read about Delilah and her career, and that's going in the show notes. So people
check it out.
Yeah, people looking at the show notes are just gonna be like, what the heck?
Where did this conversation
definitely go? Not listening to this episode. But you who are listening right now, you came all the way, and I'm really proud of you. If you learned
are these show notes available in the
on the website, like, and in no, the well, and, yeah on the website in, and in the podcast app.
Oh nice.
Yeah, they go out in the content. We're a first rate organization here.
Yeah,
otherwise known as Katie Does That.
Yeah, I can thank her for everything.
So if you want to talk to us about Delilah, then you can tweet at Tom Wilmot like last week, which Aaron Jorben did by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if saw that.
He's getting me into the bad books there. It's not good.
did you see that Aaron did that?
I did. I think Tom's probably gonna have to come on and give some disclaimers about
defend himself.
Yeah.
If you like here's what I need people to do: just go at Tom Wilmot and say, "I love that you love Delilah. I love Delilah too."
Does that make sense? I don't know.
I
need to
just say something about Delilah
thing.
To Tom Wilmot, and also congratulate both him and Joe on being hotties of GitHub.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. I'm really proud of you.
I woke up to that this morning. I was confused. You know what? At first I saw it and I was like, uh-oh, it's some WP drama coming up here. This is, someone's going to get done for this.
Yeah, it's pretty hypocritical, and that's kind of what makes it hilarious.
Who did it? Do we know?
No, I don't know, but there's a lot of WordPress people, apparently.
Somebody from WordPress.
I think I'm going to go with it. Somebody from WordPress that did it. But it's a Twitter account, and it tweets handsome gentlemen and calls them hotties of GitHub and links to their GitHub profiles. And both Tom and Joe made the list early on, too.
Early on, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe it's somebody from HumanMade. Oh, dear.
You're going to get in trouble.
I'm going to have to start a witch hunt for this.
No. Just let it go.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good thing.
It's just one of those things we'll just never know.
You can put that on your resume too, along with being a post-status draft co-host. Well, this is what happens when we do a podcast on Friday afternoon. So I guess we might as well leave it with that, huh?
Yeah.
So follow Joe at
Joe_Hoyle on Twitter, and come find me in the Core REST API chat.
Contribute to the Core REST API
chat or the REST API
or the too. API itself.
And just anything.
Yeah, just contribute. And you can find me at Krogsgaard and go to poststatus.com/club and join and get more fun things in your inbox, because your inbox is not full enough. You need me in there.
You need more emails.
Subscribe to Post Status because you need more emails.
You know when you wake up in the morning and look at your email box and you're just like, oh, it's not enough here.
Hey, you know what? Some people tell me that they smile in the morning when they see my email.
You know, I kind of do too, and that's because...
And then you continue to not read it.
I look at my email, I'm like, oh no, I've got 40 emails. I'm like, oh no, it's okay, one is the post-status email.
Awesome.
That's, I don't need to worry, that's not a negative one.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I gotta go, so we'll talk to y'all next time.
Thank you.
Bye.